Hey y'all, movie retrospective time once again. This is the movie that, again, you know, in the Patreon poll, won by a landslide. I think the other movies only got like one or two votes. This one got like a whole shit ton. This is the 2000 Canadian werewolf movie, Ginger Snaps.
I liked this movie.
You had never seen this before,
no,
had you?
No, I never saw it. I was busy at the time that it came out. I was busy being like these kids. I've been out of the Army for a few years and started falling in with my ex-wife and all her friends, and they were a bunch of goth girls that looked like that and kind of act like that, kind of dressed like that, and it just, the music and everything, just the way the things looked, it just kind of took me back to that.
Yeah, there was a lot of the music in this. I think Fear Factory was in there. Raised in Black had a song. I think Cradle of Filth might have had a song in it. Shit like that, which was, you know, that wasn't really my thing. But
yeah, these are high school students. You know, my wife and her friends weren't that old, but some of them were only a couple years out of high school. I felt kind of like the Han Solo of the group because I was in my late 20s. From their point of view, I was like the old guy.
You were like the old guy.
I was like old wise guy, old world weary, you know what I mean? This ain't like Dustin Cross, boy. You know, you might run into a star. Or a I was like doing that, you know?
Yeah, I can
see
that.
Yeah, that's the way it
was. It's just funny because I think the first thing you said when we started watching this was that it was like taking you back to this time period, like late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, late 90s, early 2000s.
Because the thing is, I mean, I graduated from high school in 1990, so by this, this was like already 10 years on, and like I said, I'd already been into goth like way back in the 80s. Yeah. So to me, I have to say, I think I've probably mentioned this on the show before, I'm not a fan of a lot of the late 90s teen horror that came. I like Scream, and the sequels to Scream are actually pretty good too. But the other movies that kind of came in the wake of that, you know, like I Know What You Did Last Summer and like all those kind of movies, they're okay, but I just wasn't a big fan of the teen horror genre like in the late 80s. That said, I guess you could kind of put this in that category, but this one was actually a lot different and actually a lot better.
It was a lot more culturally accurate, you know, like those girls who were taking pictures of themselves, dramatic pictures, look like crime scene photos. And
I love that, because that looked like some shit we would have done.
That was the same kind of shit we did, but it was more like, you know, rising up out of the grave, in the graveyard, you know, and shit, you know, it's all that fucking funny shit we used to do.
Yeah,
you know, the girls used to do that, it was fucking great. They'd show me the photos, and I was like, yeah, that's good. But there was the very beginnings of the internet. You'd fucking scan them on an expensive scanner back then, put them up on your MySpace page. Or not MySpace.
Did they even have MySpace in 2000?
No, it was fucking Web TV page.
Yeah, I don't even know if they had MySpace in 2000. I remember having MySpace in maybe 2003, 2004, or something like that.
No, it wasn't MySpace.
I kind of feel like it was early.
We were putting
2000s.
Them up on Web TV.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, the girls were scanning them at work, and then they were sending them in emails to your Web TV account, and then they were putting them up. Web TV kind of had the first, during this era, Web TV kind of had the first thing that was like MySpace.
Yeah.
And it was a Web TV user pages.
Well, I think AOL had that, too.
They had it, too, but you had to have a whole PC.
Right.
And in this era, most people only had access to a PC at work.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, young people didn't have $2,000 to throw on a PC for home use, you know? So a lot of the cool shit that we were doing online was actually done where the girls were working. Like primitive Photoshop and effects and stuff. And then you mail them to your, at that time, Web TV account and then jimmy it around. Then they started to come up with weird Prodigy stuff, which was just a laptop and a keyboard. And you had an account. It was kind of like Web TV, but it was more sophisticated. Remember that thing? I think it was a Prodigy.
We didn't have that. I remember the name, but I don't.
I think it was a Prodigy machine or something. You know, it had a dedicated.
I mean, we had a Windows computer, like probably in '98. I think we got our first one.
I had a Gateway computer.
It was Gateway or something.
Like Gateway,
or
I think it's called a Gateway 2000 in the '90s. But for some reason or another, it got lost in. I was moving around and I sold it. that kind of deal, you know. I think my stepdad gave it to me as a gift, and it quickly became obsolete. But we're getting off track. We're getting off track.
But yeah, so again, this is I would even hazard to say that this is easily one of the best werewolf movies. Easily top 10. Yeah, I mean, there. I'm saying there's not a lot of werewolf movies that have been made, and there's and of the werewolf movies that have been made, they haven't made a lot of good ones. You know what? This never occurred to me before, but I was watching like some other shit about Ginger Snaps, and somebody said that the reason that there aren't as many werewolf movies as there are, say, like vampire movies or zombie movies or something like that, is because a werewolf movie is hard to do on a low budget because you have to have a transformation scene. Yeah. You have to have a realistic looking werewolf. And if you don't have that, then your movie's not going to be any good. So I can see why, like from a budgetary point of view, why there aren't that many.
Yeah,
good ones.
I wouldn't put this like on the par with like The Howling or anything.
Well, no. But I'm just saying that it's up there.
It's up there, but the emphasis is different. They get bit. It takes them a long time to slowly become a vampire. Most of the movie is that slow kind of transformation, the weird shit that happens during that time, and they're almost kind of like a vampire during that transformation part. You know what I mean? At the very end, you see a werewolf fight, but it's not a whole movie of it.
Yeah, it's kind of more concerned with the transformation, slow burn transformation. And it's also very obviously making the parallel between Ginger's werewolfery and her puberty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not the first time that a werewolf movie has been used that way. I think Teen Wolf, you know, with Michael J. Fox in the 80s, he did that too. But interestingly, I think this might be the only one that was done with girls.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about it, this is another thing that never occurred to me until I was watching this other video about it, was that if you look in the history of horror cinema, there really aren't a lot of female werewolves, period. I mean, you know what I mean? Even though it seems like a male thing. They're like, when there's a woman that changes into something like a were-animal, it's almost always a cat, a big cat. Just because I guess cats are seen as more feminine, I suppose, than wolves are. So I think this might have been like the first one, for sure the first like well-known one that actually used female puberty, female sexuality and stuff like that to explore and use the werewolf myth to explore that. So I thought that was kind of interesting as well. And I have to say that I had seen this movie a couple times. Interestingly, here's another thing I didn't know because I said it was Canadian. It played in Canadian theaters. I don't, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't released theatrically in the United States. I think it was released in some other countries. Like, it did pretty well. I think it only cost $4.5 to $5 million to make it. So I'm pretty sure it did make its money back, and they've actually made two sequels to it, like Ginger Snaps 2, obviously. And then there was a third one called Ginger Snaps Back that I think was a prequel, except it was kind of like, it was the same two actresses, but in the 1600s, except it was almost like a remake of it, except it was in the 1600s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd like to see them. I have never seen them.
The second one, I don't think I've ever seen the second one. The second one gets like a lot of mixed reviews because they did like continue the story with Bridget, who was, you know, Ginger's sister. And they continued with the whole monkshood thing. You know what I mean? Like the plant that they, you know, boiled down and they made like a werewolf cure out of it. But in the second one, I think they're positing that it doesn't work or it's not completely effective. So Bridget, who got turned into a werewolf at the end of the first one, or at least had mixed her blood with Ginger's blood, and you would presume that she would have taken the cure. But that, I guess in the second one, they're saying that, you know, it didn't work.
I just wish I would have seen this in 2000.
I mean? It was one of those ones that kind of like it. Like I said, I don't think it was theatrical, but when it came out on video, like it started getting like a lot of word of mouth and a cult following.
I'm wondering if I had seen this in 2000, whether or not I would have approved of it back then. Would I have just seen it as just like everything else, or would I have said, "Oh, that's kind of fit"? You know, I look at it now, looking back on it, I go, "Man, that is a very culturally accurate movie about the way we were back then."
Yeah.
That's the way it was.
Yeah.
And they captured it perfectly. A lot of the movies that are kind of about the goth scene and the young people, youth scene, as you want to put it.
The youth scene.
During of the late 90s, they get it all wrong. It was wrong even back then. You look at it, you go, "Nah, those are fake teenagers. We didn't do that." It was that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Another one that was really accurate was Gypsy 83.
Oh man, I love that movie. We need to review that sometime too.
Yeah, and there's a story. I got a story about that movie. The kid in that movie, the gay kid in that.
Yeah, I remember.
You know, is a friend of my ex-wife's.
Oh, okay.
It's based on him. Although in real life that kid died, and it's not in the movie. My dad, or not my dad, my girlfriend or my ex-wife was a pen pal with him.
Yeah.
Kind of before a lot of that stuff happened in Gypsy 83.
Yeah.
Because he was out in the country by himself and just, you remember how we used to, goths used to have the fucking pen pal rings?
Yeah, yeah.
And all that. So she was writing to him that way.
Oh, okay.
And she saw his name in the credits afterwards when they were rolling it. Well, actually, Melissa saw the names in the credit and called her and said, do you realize that that's, I think his real name is Dylan, I think.
Yeah.
Really, that's about Dylan. She freaked out over it.
I need to see that movie again.
Yeah.
I remember really, really liking that because I saw that a couple times. Like,
yeah,
back in the
that
90s.
Story kind of happened, evidently, in that movie. But that happened like after my ex-wife was writing to him, after she knew him.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, most movies about that subculture are highly inaccurate. But this movie gets it down to even the fucking clothes. The fucking black knee socks with the big, heavy, fucking
the
heeled
shoes,
hot cloppers.
Yeah.
All right. Oops, what the hell? We might have to fucking edit some of this.
Yeah.
Edit this a bit. I accidentally said my dad for some reason because I was talking about Mississippi. Another one that they got right was, remember when she started to transform into the werewolf? She had the jacket and the skirt and the boots and everything, the way her hair was done. That was exactly the way goth girls from that era looked in that year and a few years before that, with the exception was she was wearing more brown earth tones to be more like a werewolf.
Yeah.
The goth girls was all black and gray and white to look more vampiric.
Yeah.
But it was those same kind of furry looking little jackets and the same boots.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
There's that, and the same hair with the colored stripes in it. It was just perfect for that era, and that's how it looked. And seeing it reminds me of how good it looked.
Yeah.
That's about time for that look to come back. It looked really good.
You could get away with wearing that nowadays.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody would look sideways at you.
No.
It's not crazy looking.
No. It looked good. It was real feminine looking, but not like frilly, in that kind of a frilly way. It was kind of sleek and feminine looking. I liked it.
Yeah.
It looked good.
Which, like I said, I think that's like a really good encapsulation of her becoming a werewolf.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so if in case you don't know, I don't know why anybody wouldn't know this, because I feel like Ginger Snaps is one that a lot of people have seen, you know, because it comes up like every best werewolf movie list that you want to name. It's, you know, easily comes up on there. So basically, it's about two sisters, you know, Ginger and Bridget. Now, Ginger is supposed to be, she's a little bit older. I think she's going to turn 16 or she's just turned 16, and her sister is 15. And one thing I like about this, the actresses are slightly older than their counterparts in the movie, but not that much older. I think they were only like 18, 19, 20, something like that. So it wasn't like 30-year-olds playing high school students, which I kind of got a lot of that late 90s teen horror movies. I kind of got that vibe. It's like that person is clearly not a high school student. These two were actually closer in age to actual high school students.
Even though they're supposedly 15 and 16, they're really for the era they were acting more like 17 and 18 year olds.
Yeah, but that scans because like I feel like a lot of girls, like, you know, when I was in high school and like, you know, friends of mine that were, and you know, that's going back like a decade before this, but we were kind of
a little bit ahead, maybe.
A little bit ahead because, you know, we were really into, you know, literature and we were all into this kind of stuff. So, so I feel like they were like a little more mature for their age. I also really like that they nailed, because like I said, I saw this movie a couple times, like back in the day, but I hadn't seen it for many years. And watching it again a couple nights ago, I was like, oh my God, I forgot how fucking funny this movie is.
Yeah.
Like the first half, especially like all the shit with, you know, the shit
humor
in the school, their humor with each other.
Yeah.
Mimi Rogers playing the mom. Oh my God, that shit is fucking hilarious. Because, like, the shit, the cringy shit their mom says about, like, fuck. And when Ginger, like, gets her period and she, like, makes her a cake and shit like that. It was just, oh my God, I was dying.
It was just spot on for the time. And like I tell you, I was already in my late 20s during that time. But in our fucking extended ring of fucking goth friends, some of them were just like maybe seniors in high school or maybe just got out. That's the way they were. They were like that. And usually like the older goths kind of took care of them, kept them out of trouble.
That was the baby bats.
And the baby bats. You got them ready. you got them ready for when they hit 19. That way they were old enough to get into the club.
Yeah.
So you were kind of schooling them. for like a year or two until they were old enough. You know what I mean? It was a good time, and it was the time of the early internet, and social media hadn't really kind of taken its effect on people yet. It was just a good time. The scene was social media for us, not some electronic thing, not at that time.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, there was a lot of stuff with pen pals and, like, writing to magazines.
Pen pal
and
rings.
All this. Yeah, shit
like
that.
I was telling you, my ex-wife, she was big into those pen pal rings because she was in growing up in Mississippi in an environment like this, and there wasn't really an established internet. That's how goths met each other.
Yeah.
And it was just like, people were like, what the fuck are you talking about? It was a bunch of pieces of paper like this, and each one of them had photographs and Xerox things, mostly Xeroxed photographs. And sayings and, like, profile of a person written on a piece of paper and their address. And you might have 30 of them. And with a hole going through it, and it's all with a string going through it. And you would go through there and see the people that you liked, get all their addresses and start writing them. Then you took the ring and you mailed that to somebody else, another goth. And then they went through it and they'd pass it around. And sometimes it had gifts on it. It was another fucking time.
Like a chain letter. But not a shitty one.
Yeah, no. And it was all like handmade little profiles. Some of it would be made out of leather. Some of it would be made out of cloth with fucking cool shit on it. It was a time when you made things by hand. It's like something off of Etsy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all like gothed out. And those were around for probably about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And then we had fanzines. Which were local magazines that you made on a repeatograph type thing.
Yeah.
With your friends on it. And then you got other people involved in it. And you just gave them out for free. You handed them out for free at the club.
Yeah.
Usually that's what you did.
Yeah.
And people contributed. Maybe they'll make a whole page. And then you go, yeah, okay. And you copy that off on a repeatograph. And they're around, And some of that shit got wild. You know what I mean? They're fucking, you look and there's like basically like a couple pages of maybe like nudes or softcore kind of porn with some goth girls in the local area, you know who that is. They're dressed up in outfits, you know. Really wasn't real sex. They're just simulated type.
Yeah.
Stuff, you know. Lesbian vampire makeout shootout. Lesbian vampire makeout, what do you call them? Photo shoots and shit. In the damn fanzine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking another time.
Sure. Yeah, it was. But yeah, So yeah, I have to say too that I really, really like the opening credits of this movie. I think we mentioned it before, but these two girls who are sisters, they are kind of like, I mean, they're the weirdos at school. This takes place in a fictional town called Bailey Downs. They never tell you that it's Canada, but it is Canada.
Yeah, I saw that neighborhood and I'm like, where the fuck is that?
Yeah, it's Canada.
They don't have neighborhoods that look like that.
Yeah, they can't. I can't remember the name. They use like three different suburbs, like in Canada. It might have been Ontario or Southern Ontario or something like that.
It looked like something in England or something.
Where they filmed it. And so it's a fictional town. So these two get picked on in school a lot, you know, as they would, because they're weirdos and freaks and they're like all death obsessed and stuff.
Yeah, y'all have it easy. It was hard when we were doing this.
It was, yeah. So like, yeah, so I could relate to these characters. And so they kind of just have, you know, and they're very close in age and they have, you know, interests, you know, in common. So the two sisters basically are like, if we don't get out of this town by the time we're both 16, then we're gonna kill ourselves. They have like a suicide pact. Whether they're really gonna do it or not, I don't know.
Nah, they were bullshitting.
Yeah, probably. But it's like, but what they're doing, they're working on a school project where they're like taking all these pictures of themselves like in simulated death things.
Yeah.
And I love that they show all the photos like during the opening credits. Like, you know, there's my favorite one is the one where Ginger is laying on the grass and there's like a lawnmower laying on top of her and there's like fucking intestines.
Yeah, I never
it's so awesome.
I never actually saw anybody do that in the scene, but similar. I saw
that
actually,
looks
no,
like
I,
yeah.
Actually, I did see that, but that was like big city goths doing that kind of shit.
Well,
like,
who had the money and expertise money, to like, do the special effects?
Yeah, because it was pretty cool, like the special effects.
Yeah. So definitely. So you had that, which gave me a little bit of a Harold and Maude vibe, because I feel like Harold in that movie was always like staging suicides, like for the benefit of his mom. But she was kind of over it. So kind of the same thing was going on here. They were doing this project with all these death photos and their mom was just kind of like, oh, you know, there's the kids with their death photos again.
We were always doing shit like going to the graveyards and doing fucking photo shoots out there, like rising from the grave or fucking photo shoots of like you're doing tarot cards and stuff. It was just another time.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically these two girls now, unusually, and especially I guess unusually for nowadays, neither of these two girls, despite being 15 and 16, have had their period yet. Like I said, it's not super weird. It does happen. But it's almost kind of like they don't want to get their period because they don't want to be adults. They don't want to like have this responsibility, I guess. Or they, you know, they just kind of want to stay with each other and they don't want to like go. They don't want to run off with boys and they don't want to
do that.
Well, I think
my interpretation was is that they really weren't into fucking boys yet. They were too shy about it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So they didn't really, yeah. And they were so...
That changes, though.
Right. Yeah, know? But they were so bullied that they only had each other. So they were just kind of like, you know, you can't leave me for some dude, you know, that's like a betrayal, which is kind of, which is the way that a teenage girl would think.
Yeah, the girls didn't like him, but the guys were starting to check him out. They're like, that one of them, they started to focus in on a redhead.
Well, after she got, after she started, like, wolfing out a little bit.
But because, even before that, remember, she, her period was coming, and she was like... Her back was hurting, and the guys were watching her, and she goes, "You got a nice rack."
Yeah, that's true. So they were kind of like looking,
like,
because she
like,
was kind of wearing frumpy clothes before that.
Yeah, they're like, "She's looking pretty good." She he tried to make a move on her, but he did the shit wrong.
That's right. Well, that was, I love that scene too, because, and like I said, this was one of the scenes where I was like, I forgot how fucking funny this movie is. The guy just basically came up, and what did he say? He says something like,
"Hey, when are we going to hook up? Hey, man,
we should," he didn't say hook up. He said, "We should get together, or we should be together," or something like that. And she just looks at him and goes, "No."
Yeah. It was kind of working. The hormones were calling her. The hormones were calling her, but his approach was too positive and optimistic. He was approaching her like maybe like he was approaching her in the way a fucking football jock, which what he was.
Yeah, he was kind of a popular kid.
Would approach a fucking cheerleader.
Yeah.
That's what he was doing. Like, hey, it's like, I've chosen you. Let's go out. No, he wasn't that bad. He was like, hey, how you doing?
That's what it seems like.
I've chosen you. I've chosen you. Let's go out. We should be together. We should hang out together.
I've chosen you.
And basically.
Yay!
Yeah, well, he couldn't consider. He did like her, though.
I
like
her. It's just. But I just think it's
like,
funny.
She was thinking about it, but she's like, nah. That's not how you approach goth girls. You didn't do it back then. That's not how you did that shit back then.
Well, and the thing too is that being in the goth scene and being like having these kind of normal people come to the goth bars and they would try to pick you up because they don't know how to act because they have a weird fetish, I guess, like for goth chicks, and they think like you're into this weird freaky shit and they're just like, "Ooh, I'm going to try that out." And it's like they don't understand that we've had that happen like for years and years, like millions of times.
Back in those days, fucking goth. Goths met other goths by going, "Those are some fantastic shoes. God, those shoes are awesome."
Either that or you had like a really cool band shirt on that they were really
into. It couldn't be a lie. It had to be true.
Yeah.
He's like, "Man, I like those shoes." Because usually that was the most expensive thing a goth girl had on was shoes.
Yeah, and they saved up for like a really long time.
So
either that or corsets. You can get cheap corsets nowadays, but back in the day they were really expensive.
It depended on where you met her. In a club, she might have a corset, but if you just met her around at school or something like that...
Yeah, not that many people wear corsets at school.
It would just be shoes. Daytime meet encounter would be like shoes.
Yeah.
She says, "I like your shoes." Because then she knew that you knew the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, "Yeah, these are my new rocks."
And if you were dressed...
They cost $400.
if you were already dressed up, sometimes you could say that shit, because you're wearing your shit. You had the right to say that shit. "Those some good shoes." She goes, thanks. Yeah, you're looking good. You know, it wasn't, as long as they were on the same level. As long as you were on the same level with that girl, it wasn't hard.
And like I said, as long as you weren't like making it like she was just.
It wasn't a pickup.
A fetishy. Yeah. Like, it's like, "Ooh, I'm going to get like a..."
I'm going to teach these people how to pick up goth girls, man.
Well, it's too late now. You already said it.
It did. Well, no, you had to be a goth. If you were a goth and you were a good one.
Yeah, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't work if you were like some.
No.
Jack looking motherfucker. No. That wouldn't work.
No, they had their defenses up for that.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Still do. But yeah, so these two sisters, like I said, they haven't had their periods yet, but Ginger starts getting that back pain, and that's another really funny scene where they're all around the dinner table and like she's like, "God damn," and it's like the mom's like, "Where is the pain at? Is it right here?" And she's like, "Yeah, I guess." And she's like, "Oh, you're getting your period. Yay." Yeah. And then like the dad is over there just kind of going like, "I'm eating. Oh my God." And it's like, that's one of the things that cracks me up about this, because I feel like a lot of movies, they don't really talk about, you know, girls' periods. And it's just it's very, very funny to me when they do, when they talk about it really matter-of-factly in a movie and it, how uncomfortable it makes people. And they're also kind of like making a joke about that dad being like really uncomfortable about it and shit. But even the girls themselves are kind of uncomfortable about it because they go to like the fucking, you know, after Ginger gets her period and then gets bit by the werewolf in what is actually a very good and well-edited scene. They don't show the werewolf too much. It's just kind of like drags her around and like chops her up or, you know, scratches her and bites her and stuff. And when she starts wolfing out, she doesn't want to believe it. So she thinks that it's all having to do with the period because she's like, oh, I'm growing hair, like this coarse hair out of this, like cuts on her shoulder and stuff. And, so the sister, Bridget, like pretty much immediately knows that it's got to be a werewolf, but Ginger doesn't believe it. So she goes to the school nurse's office and like the school nurse is just like talking about the periods, like talking about how they work and everything like that. Yeah. And the two girls are just like, they're like mortified. Yeah. And it's just like so, so funny to me. But yeah, so, so Ginger, like I said, she doesn't really believe she's turning into a werewolf, but Bridget does. And I think this is cool too. Like Bridget actually has an ally in the form of this dude named Sam, who I guess he's like older, because he goes out with that school bully girl who I think her name's Trina in the movie, like that bitchy girl. And he's like the drug dealer, like the school drug dealer. And he actually hits the werewolf with his car, like shortly after it bites Ginger. And he is pretty sure that it's a werewolf, like not only because it kind of looks like a big wolf, which obviously they don't have around there, but also he notices that the penis of the werewolf is circumcised.
Yeah, that's funny.
So I was like, I thought that was a nice touch that like
that thing was circumcised. That was a man.
Yeah, that's how he knew it was a werewolf.
Crazy photos we used to take back then. That was from that time. That was me from that time.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the kind of shit we used to do. And they
like
talked,
Gary Newman.
Yeah, and they talked about this kind of stuff. It was just very accurate for the time. I mean, that's the way the girls looked back then. And the way they show the werewolves, it's the same way. So I just liked that era of fashion. And they got it right.
Yeah, that's because like they weren't, you know, they weren't super dressed up or anything, but obviously they weren't old enough to go to clubs, they were just going to school.
Yeah, a lot of it was just like that.
Yeah.
And that's the way it looked.
So yeah, so I really like that they did that with the werewolf. So Bridget has this kind of older guy who believes her, and they're basically like, well, we need to do something about this. Because prior to this, like from the very beginning of the movie, there has been a werewolf running around, which is, nobody knows it's a werewolf, obviously, but they're calling it the Beast of Bailey Downs. And so far, it's just been killing people's dogs. And by the way, if you were a dog lover and you don't want to see a bunch of dogs, like, horribly mauled, you probably don't want to watch this movie because you don't see it happening, but you see the aftermath. And the aftermath is pretty gnarly. Like, a lot of dogs...
It's not real, of course.
No, it's not real, but a lot of dogs, like, you know, fake, get all fucked up and messed up, and it's pretty, like, gross looking. So the effects are really good. But like I said, if you're real sensitive about that, you might not want to watch this movie because a lot of dogs get killed. But so he hits that werewolf. Like I said, the werewolf has a dick. So the two of them kind of get together. Now, at first, Bridget tells him that it's her that's turning into a werewolf because I guess she wants to protect her sister. However, Sam is not really a dummy, and he eventually, by the time that they figure out that Monkshood, which is kind of like a variation of Wolfsbane or is like a relative of Wolfsbane, but he says it's not as toxic in small doses, which I'm not sure that's the case. I'm not a pharmacologist or anything, but I think that Monkshood is also toxic, so don't be drinking that like to cure yourself of werewolfery, just a pro tip. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it works for the movie, though, because it's like a scientific type of thing. There's no magic or anything.
Yeah, and the guy that's doing this is kind of, if you ask me, he's kind of like a stand-in Christian Slater. He was kind of reminding
me. He looks a lot like Christian Slater, yeah. And I think he was in maybe some of this director's other movies. John Fawcett directed it, by the way, who actually went on to do the very popular British TV show Orphan Black. So Sam figures out that it's actually Ginger that's the werewolf because she has obviously started to act very differently. She started growing a tail. She's gotten really sexually voracious. Like, the one guy she said no to earlier, I think his character's name is Jason, like, they go out on a date, and basically she just, like, jumps on him and, like, scratches him all up and shit.
Yeah, he's bragging about all the scratches he's got.
I know, which is, like, it's funny because, like, at the time, they're, like, you know, humping in the back of the car, and she gets all mad because he's, like, She wants to get on top, and he's like, "Wait, who's the man here?" And she's like, "Who's the man here?" Bam! I'm like, and she like tears his ass up.
She gets real strong, evidently. But the actress probably weighs 100 pounds.
She's a tiny, tiny, tiny woman.
Yeah, she's real little.
Yeah, she was very, very small. I couldn't even believe it. Like, when she walks down the hall the first time, like, after she got her period and the werewolfy thing, and she walks down the hall at school, like, wearing kind of sexier clothes, and everybody's turning to look at her.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I can't believe how small that girl is. She's fucking tiny.
She looked great, though. That kind of build looks really good in clothing.
Yeah.
Especially that type of clothing that she had on. You know?
Yeah.
It's not that full figure fucking porn star fucking look, but as far as modeling clothing, that's a really good build.
Yeah.
For that.
But yeah, she's super, super small. But it goes on that Ginger, you think that she killed Jason, like, during the date where she tore his ass up and everything. But it turned out that she just killed the neighbor's dog. However, she does end up killing Trina later on. And I can't say I feel too bad about that, because Trina was kind of a twunt. She infected him, yeah. And he's, you know... He
didn't take it too well.
No.
Broke out in a bunch of zits and started acting like a psycho.
And started peeing blood.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't know what was going on.
My pen exploded. My red pen.
Yeah. And he started to, like, grow a tail. He knew something was wrong by then, but... He got killed, I think, didn't he?
No, he did not. What ended up happening with that is, remember that Bridget and Sam had, you know, had the syringe with the monk's head?
Yeah, that's right. They cured him.
And she was going home to try it out on Ginger, because she had locked Ginger up. However, Ginger had escaped. When she was going back out, she ran into Jason, so she said, oh, I'll try this out on him beforehand so I know that if it's going to work or not. And it seemed to work. They didn't really... Well, that's what's kind of interesting, is they left that kind of open-ended. Like, you assume that it worked, because she put it in his neck, and then he seemed to, like, act normal again, and he's like, I gotta go to class, or whatever. Yeah. But then, as it goes on, she never does, she's gonna give it to Ginger, and then there's, like, all this other stuff. Like I said, Ginger kills, like, a couple other people, and Bridget, to get Ginger to come back to the house with her so she can administer the rest of the cure... She actually, like, cuts her hand open and, like, mixes her blood with her. She's like, look, I'm a werewolf too. Now you have to come with me. Like, now we're together forever, just like we said we were going to be. So, but then, like, Sam kind of fucks it up, because then he hits Ginger in the head with a shovel. And she's like, you dumbass. It's like, you know, I did that to, like, get her back to the house because I had more stuff at the house. But she doesn't end up taking it. So what ends up happening at the end, and like I said, this came out in 2000. This was 20 years ago. If you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, you know, sorry, but... You know what I'm saying? So what ends up happening at the end is that Sam gets killed, because he's like, well, I'm going to go, you know, give her the cure. But, you know, Ginger is not having that. And at this point, Ginger is like full on werewolf. And she looks like, and like I said, I like that the werewolf design, you can tell this was a lower budget movie. But the werewolf still looks pretty good.
Kind of like the one out of Werewolf in London. In the end, it's kind of broad, down on all fours.
Yeah,
it's
but not furry.
Not furry, no.
It's almost kind of like they made it, like, not furry, which I thought was kind of an interesting
like a human,
choice.
It's like a wolf. It's like a human shaped more like a wolf, but no, not hair. Not hairy. It's weird.
Because some of the close-ups that they used, I think, were a puppet, but I think that one was... I mean, that one was a puppet, too, but I think it was, like, puppeteered, whereas, like, I think the one in the butt is... Like,
I actually think I kind of would have preferred a wolf, like, something out of fucking Howling. Something that stood upright, but... This is what they chose to do.
Well, that's what I mean. You can't,
right.
You know, I know that a lot of werewolf movies, they have like a stand-up werewolf, because I guess that's just like easier to do. But, you know, I think the werewolf in this looks pretty good. And like I said, I like the fact that they kept it from looking like a girly werewolf. It just looks like a wolf, because like I said, or it looks like a werewolf would look. You can't really tell if it's a male or female, because like I said, wolves, you can't tell by looking at them if they're male or female. So, you know, that's kind of what they did. So she ends up, you know, killing Sam. And then at the end, when her and Bridget are fighting, and Bridget ends up stabbing her to death and just kind of lays there while Ginger dies. Now, that's the end. Now, you were led to assume, you know, again, that after the movie ended, that Bridget took the cure, because she had also you know, taken Ginger's blood and was presumably going to turn into a werewolf in her turn. So you presume that that's what happened, like, after the events of the movie. Although, like I said, in the sequel, it turns out that the monk's hood worked, but it was only temporary, or it didn't work all the way, or something like that. So she had to, like, do some other shit. Like I said, I haven't seen the second one. I just kind of, like, read the plot synopsis, or I heard somebody else talking about it. So they do kind of, like, clear that up. One interesting thing that I wish, because I really, really love this movie. I think it's really good. Easily, like, you know, if you're talking about, like, best werewolf movies, yeah, gonna be like, you know, The Howling, American Werewolf in London, Dog Soldiers, all that kind of stuff. But I think this is definitely up there. It's really, really well done. And it's one of the very few that has a female werewolf in it, which I thought was really cool. I really liked the whole puberty as werewolf transformation thing. They did a lot of funny gags with that, like at the beginning. And like I said, I forgot how fucking funny this movie was. The two girls that were in it, were the chemistry with them was great. They actually seemed like actual sisters, like the way they talked to each other.
Soundtrack and music and stuff. And
I mean, all your late 90s, early 2000s goth, well, sort of goth metal.
It
favorites.
Was industrial in there too. Yeah. I mean, it's a solid flick all around. It's a testament to that era. And it's not a real big budget movie, but it did capture the feeling of the time. It just did to me.
Yeah.
I felt like I was going back in time going, yeah, that's it.
The only thing I would ding it on is I think the third act drags slightly, just slightly. Yeah. And also I don't like that they left the subplot with the mom open-ended.
Yeah.
Because I think what happened, like when they kill Trina, they don't actually kill her on purpose. Necessarily, like her and Ginger are fighting, and then Trina like falls in the kitchen and like busts her head open on the side of the cabinet. And I love that the parents are coming home, so they have to like pretend this is another death scene that they've done. Yeah. And the mom is just kind of like, oh, you kids, clean that all up or whatever. And then they have like the body in the freezer, and they break the fingers off while they're trying to get the body out.
You're right, there were some parts in this movie where the edit isn't real tight. It gets a little bit muddy, but it doesn't ruin the flick. It's still not at all.
That's a very, very minor nitpick.
Yeah.
And like I said, so there's like an interesting thing where the mom, played by Mimi Rogers, as I mentioned, who is delightful in this. She's in some of the best, like, funniest scenes. Just her reactions to shit are funny. Now, the interesting thing about her character is she finds Trina's body, which they have buried, like, in their backyard, like, in the shed or something like that.
It's underneath that house.
Yeah, like, underneath their old playhouse or whatever. Yeah. So she finds the body, and her first instinct is, I'm going to protect my two daughters no matter what. I'm going to burn the house down, and we're going to take off. You know what I mean? And she's just totally serious about it. And, you know, Bridget's like, well, what about Dad? And she, like, doesn't even say anything about it. Yeah. Kind of just like, fuck him, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, because the dad character is kind of like not present, which I guess was sort of
seem to care about him too much anyway. He was kind of a douche, really.
He was a douche.
He wasn't a dick. It was just like he was. Like
he was very neglectful.
Like, it didn't really matter.
He seemed like he didn't really care that much about what was going on and, you know, all that other kind of stuff.
There was a backstory. He had a girlfriend. You know, he didn't really give a shit.
Yeah, because he seemed like he wasn't really, like, as annoying as her character was, like, but she was meant to be annoying, like this kind of helicopter parent who was trying to be a cool parent. Like, you can talk to me about anything. You can talk to me about boys and your period and all this other kind of stuff. And then the girls were like, just like mortified by her presence. Yeah. So she was like a little try hard, but her heart was in the right place.
Yeah.
And I feel like she had a lot of issues, and they don't really go into it, but you can tell, like, just
later on
in a couple of lines, like that when she says stuff to the dad, that she's kind of like feels like she has to do this all by herself. Like the dad is sort of checked out.
Yeah.
So you can see at the end where she's just basically like, I'm going to blow the whole house up, and me and my daughter's just going to run off and change our identity or whatever.
Well,
and that's kind of like the last time you see her is when she's sitting in the car Bridget goes in to get Ginger from the party so she can give her the cure, and then you don't see the mom again. Like, she just kind of goes to the party and Bridget takes off and ditches her.
Knowing how it went in my generation, a lot of times, you know, as soon as the kids were out of high school, the parents divorced.
So yeah, they were just waiting. Get out of the house so I can get rich. I'm sick of this.
Yeah, and that's like, my parents divorced before that. You know what I mean?
But yeah, my parents were 14.
The kids that I was graduating through high school with, as soon as the fucking their graduations went down, their parents split up. As soon as all the kids are old enough, because they got married young anyway.
Yeah.
Baby boomers did. So and that's what they were talking about, I think, in this movie.
Yeah. Like I said, they don't go super together. Into it because I think the dad is only in like two or three scenes,
maybe. I think the parents were just together for the time being.
Yeah.
Until the kids were out of high school.
Yeah. So I kind of wish that they had followed up on that just a little. Maybe they did in the sequel. I'm not really sure. But like what happened with the mom? You know what I mean? Like what happened when she got home and found Bridget with this fucking dead werewolf that used to be Ginger? Like, I guess that's a sign of a good movie because you're wondering, like, what happened? Like, after the credits rolled, like, what happened to these people? Like, what was the mom's reaction to that shit? Because I would have loved to have seen that. But yeah, that's, like I said, that's a minor nitpick that they just kind of, you know, left that dangling. But other than that, I really, really like this movie. And like I said, one of the very few female werewolf movies, which I think is really cool. I found out that they are actually, as of October, which is only a couple months ago, they're talking about making a series out of this. So we'll see how that goes.
Series, maybe.
Yeah, it actually might make a good series. Yeah. I like the mythology that they use with the more scientific thing of the werewolf. They don't explain where the first werewolf came from, but you know, the stuff about the monk's hood and, you know, being a cure and maybe not working as well. So I feel like there's a lot you could do with that.
I'd be interested in seeing the series. I think the series would be better if it was back in the 90s or the fucking 2000s.
I'm kind of hoping they said it back then,
because
too.
Because that's before social media and cell phones. I mean, they had them, but not only rich people had cell phones during that era. Well, not rich people, I guess. Well, they were just not really. They just weren't widespread. They were still expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
They were big. It just really wasn't worth it. Kids didn't have them. I think it would be better. If it's in modern times, it probably, I don't know.
Yeah,
but
I'm always...
For me, the appeal of this movie, a big part of it is the era.
Is the era that it was made.
Yeah.
And I do feel like, well, that's the thing. I do feel like when they've remade properties like that, I think the shitty ones are the ones where they tried to update it, but the best ones, I think, are the ones where they kind of set it in the same era.
Yeah.
And as I said, I think lately, it's just easier... I guess it's not easier from a production design standpoint, but it's easier to write a horror movie
in olden days
when you don't have the access to GPS and cell phones and you don't have all this stuff that you can fall back on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No internet.
Yeah, no internet, no nothing like that. So I think it makes things like a lot more complicated. So that's, I think that's why you see a lot of horror movies made nowadays that are set back in that era.
The late 90s, early 2000s was just, you know, for you youngsters, man, I'll call y'all youngsters.
It was
just a totally different era. Totally different. I mean, you were just very low information. Which in some ways, there was a lot more mystery in life. You really had to work hard to find information. So it was more rewarding when you found it. But you were mostly, you know, researching something on the internet we had back then. You weren't going to find it. It was going to be something in books.
Yeah.
And, you know, books were fucking expensive and big. And you had to go to the library or you had to order one. And then it was the book was kind of out of date anyway. So, you know... the flow of information was slower back then and less... there's a lot of misinformation now online, but at least it's coming faster and you can whittle it down to what you think probably more what happened or what the right thing to do is. Not back then. You had to kind of rely on friends and instinct and intuition, which was
It's like, I read this thing in this book, so it must be true. But it's like there was no way you'd have to like stumble across. They're like, no, that's actually not true. Like in some other book that you happen to read.
And you had to ask like one of your older trusted friends, what do we do with this? And he did, well, let me see. And that was the position I was in back in those days. You know, you'd have like teenage people and 18, 19 years old. Tom, what do we do about this and that? And I'm fucking going Han Solo. You never want to know. And I'm fucking 27, 28. I'm sounding wise as fuck. You know?
Well, to a
nowadays, they just go online and look.
Yeah, everybody just looks up everything.
Just look it up online.
So, like I said, it makes things a lot easier.
Right. And putting a horror movie in modern days.
It can be done. It's been done. I've seen a lot of really good, you know, horror movies set now, but...
It's best in outer space where you're isolated, where you have technology, but you can't call for help because you're in outer fucking space.
Yeah, I feel like
shit like that.
It depends on what kind of horror movie you're making, but right. I do feel like nowadays they always have to come up with some idea, like they have to come up with some excuse why people can't use their cell phones or they can't use the internet. Like, oh, there's a blizzard and
or
you know everything's out,
facility.
Or you're in an underground, or yeah, you're out in the middle of nowhere where there's no Wi-Fi or something like that. Yeah. There always has to be some reason why you can't use it.
Yeah, you
because
can't,
it just makes everything so
easy. Yeah, you can't set this in a suburb now. So every suburb and every person has a fucking cell phone.
Yeah. And like you would know. And if there was a werewolf running around a suburb like this, everyone would know like immediately because everyone would film it.
Yeah.
Everyone would film it.
And you'd know what to do about the werewolf because you just Google the shit.
Yeah.
How do you kill a werewolf?
Although like I think even now, like even back then, people knew that kind of shit.
Well, you got zombie movies where they don't even know to call them zombies.
See, that bothers me. I'm like, everybody knows what a zombie is.
You have to figure out how to shoot him in the head to kill him.
Yeah, it's like every movie. It's like, do we really have to go through this again? Everybody knows how to kill a zombie by now. Come on. That's why if you're going to do that, set the movie back in like the 1800s or something. Yeah. When people actually didn't know what zombies were.
Right.
All right. So anyway, if you have not seen Ginger Snaps, which like I said, is very hard for me to believe... it's actually...
Shit, I didn't see it.
That's true. You hadn't seen it.
I didn't see it.
But you're not like a horror dork like a lot of people.
Yeah, and I was busy at this time, man. We're fucking New Orleans, and in New Orleans fucking partying and shit, man. We were making movies like this happen in real life. In the goth scene down Crystal and shit. Crystal and fucking... Man, never mind. Crystal and the convent.
But yeah, so if you want to watch it, it's on Shudder in the U.S., and I think it's also on Tubi, if I'm not mistaken, so if you want to watch it for free. But yeah, it's a good movie. Like I said, good special effects, good characters, and, you know, it's just a fun, funny movie all around. So we'll see you on the next movie retrospective. Bye.